I don't always get to write when I want to write, but that's okay. And it will just take longer. And I feel very, very strongly that it really, really doesn't matter how fast you write. It matters how well you write.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Cheng, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence. You're listening to episode 62 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Cheng. Hey, what's up, guys? As most of you might have noticed, our main site, 88cupsoftea.com, was down for about 48 hours, and our email server was down for a full day before that. So just a little backstory, we had to switch the emails over to a different server that's a lot more stable so this doesn't ever happen again. Making these changes unknowingly caused 88cupsoftea.com to go down for a bit. I sent out an email with important questions for listeners who are subscribed to our newsletter, and so many of you have written me back. You have no idea how touched I am to see how thoughtful your responses are. And quite honestly, I'm so mortified that the whole email server went down literally a few hours after I sent you guys the questions. This has never happened before, so you can imagine how freaked out I was. I am so sorry for any inconvenience this might have caused. But the amazing news is the site and my email is now up and running at 100%, so I'm going to reply to each and every one of your emails. If you sent me an email but you don't hear from me by this weekend, please forward it to me once more because it might have got lost in the ether space. I really want to hear your thoughts and I promise to get back to you. So again, thank you guys so much for hanging in tight the last few days. I really appreciate you. Now, before we head into today's interview, I wanted to thank Vermont College of Fine Arts for sponsoring today's episode. Their MFA writing program has been around for 35 years. At the end of the show, you'll find out why they're ranked one of the best low residency writing programs in the country. I'm so excited to have Christina Henriquez on the show today. Christina is the author of The Book of Unknown Americans, which I recently read, and I totally fell in love with her work. Her voice is so refreshing, authentic, and real. Her novel was a New York Times Notable Book of 2014 and one of Amazon's top 10 books of the year. In today's episode, Christina and I dive deep into the inspiration behind her novel and her writing process. I'm so thrilled about this because I'm a huge fan of her newest novel and how she skillfully shows us what it means to be connected through hope and to belong somewhere. We discuss how to build strong characters by first uncovering the language of the story and how to use multiple first-person narratives as a way to create diversity in your story. We also go into detail about how Christina reads books and how that can strengthen your writing. A lot of you are looking into an MFA for writing and shopping around for workshop classes. Be sure to pay special attention to Christina's own experiences with school. Now let's jump right in. Christina, how are you? What's up?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. I read The Book of Unknown Americans and I love it. My girlfriend read it too. She loves it. My parents themselves are also immigrants. They came from Taiwan and Malaysia. And I love what you've done with the characters is that really the core of it shows us what it means to belong somewhere. We know what's going on right now. The whole system for immigrants coming is messed up and not in their favor. But I'm really, really happy to have stories out there like yours that shows us who people like our parents are. Beyond what you see, they're just like everybody else. They have their own stories. I'd love to know if you can share with us the inspiration behind The Book of Unknown Americans.
Well, first of all, thank you for reading, and to your girlfriend and anybody else around you who may have read the book. It's always so gratifying to hear that still. You know, the whole time you're writing something, you just don't know, first of all, if the project is going to work out at all. And then even if it does, whether it will be published, and if it's published, whether anybody will read it. And if anybody reads it, you know, whether they'll actually like it. So it's always nice to hear that kind of reaction. So thank you for that, first of all. This is a book that was dedicated to my dad, and it was really inspired by him in many ways. I mean, it is not his story on the pages of the book. The characters in the book have their own lives, but I don't think I would have been able to write this book without my dad. And my dad, like you're saying about your parents, is an immigrant who came to the United States from Panama when he was 18 years old. And he came on a student visa because he was going to study chemical engineering at the University of Delaware. He thought he would get his degree and go back to Panama when he was finished. But while he was here, he ended up meeting this girl who ended up being my mom. And, you know, I think she changed the course of his life, essentially. He stayed here because of her, got married. They had three kids. I'm the oldest. And he's been here for more than 40 years now. And as you rightly pointed out, I mean, I think there's a lot of talk about immigration and immigrants in newspapers and on mainstream cable news and all that kind of stuff. And that portrayal of immigrants seemed very antithetical to the idea that I had about my dad, mm-hmm. who was an immigrant. And I felt very strongly that his story and stories like his were not represented enough in literature, mm-hmm. not to mention lots of other places, movies and music and theater and all that kind of stuff. But for me as a writer, I felt like, well, I had an opportunity maybe to honor his journey and honor his experience in a certain way. And that's partly how the Book of Unknown Americans was born.
I really resonate with that. I'm also the oldest child, so I think even more so as the firstborn, we understand the responsibility and our parents' stories even more. Not so much like my mom guilts me or anything like that, but we get firm reminders of how hard they've worked and mm-hmm. how much they've gone through to give us what we have right now. And it's really incredible. I mean, like, I don't know how the hell they did what they did. Any of our parents, especially coming from another country, starting up from scratch, not speaking English, is incredible. Like, you know, most of my friends can't even speak more than one language. You know, it's not anything to put down or anything. It's just like a fact. And just getting to know their story more is just makes people more understanding and more accepting and realizing, okay, we're not that different.
Something about what you just said was reminding me of how my mom was really protective of my dad when we were growing up. So I remember times when he would mispronounce something, and still to this day there's certain words that like he just doesn't say right, and my mom would always look at my brother and sister and I'd be like, don't correct him, don't tell him otherwise, because he's worked really hard to get to the point he's at already. We don't want to, you know, embarrass him or shame him or anything like that. And that message was very clear, all that he's gone through. You know?
I love that your mom was such a protector. Just to bounce off of that, that reminds me, I used to grow up going fishing with my dad almost every weekend out in Long Island in New York. I would be like your mom, the protector. I would be the protective one because I was nervous that the people going fishing with my dad would make some comment about the way he was speaking English. I mean, till this day, he has his company in Queens, and it's a part of Queens where you don't even have to speak English to survive there. He's thrived and has an amazing company with my mom. And he speaks mostly Chinese. You really don't even have to learn English to get around there, which is really remarkable in itself and fascinating. But outside of that, when my dad would bring me fishing, well, I would volunteer to go with him at like 3 a.m. is mostly because I was worried people would be like, wait, what did you just say? Or that's not how you pronounce it. Like your mom is saying how hard your dad has worked. I understood that when I was younger and I didn't want that to like ever hurt my dad or ever put him down, because I felt like I was there to guard him and be the one speaking English so that no one would mess with him because he's already worked his ass off. And there's, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. The message was always so much more about, you know, honoring and valuing all that he had accomplished and all that he, you know, how far he had come and all that he has contributed and continues to contribute to this country. You know, like those kinds of things were very much, that was the message, I think, behind that, like saying, you know, don't say anything to him. Let's focus on these other things instead.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for sharing that. I love stories, especially about upbringings and about our parents. I think that's what really makes all of us tick. So it's really nice to hear where you're coming from. And you dedicated the story in honor of your dad. And I love that. What about the characters, Maribel, Mayor Toro? Where did those characters come from? The inspiration behind them?
So I can never get into a project unless I can hear the language in my head. And the first line of this book that occurred to me was the line, "We heard they were from Mexico." And that is the first line of Mayor's first chapter now. So his voice was the first one that I actually heard. And I think partly for that reason, he's the character who I feel the most connected to. I can't say, it's hard to say how these voices kind of come to me. You know, sometimes I'm like, maybe I need to go to therapy or something. Because I do, I'll just sort of walk around and hear voices in my head. And that one was strong enough that I started just sort of building it out and figuring out who that character really was. What I did essentially from that line was make a short story. I wrote a short story that was just about Mayor seeing this girl, Maribel, move in across the apartment building from him, and him initially being attracted to her and sort of falling for her. At the end of the short story, he takes her out to the beach. And that was kind of the scope of the whole thing. And I thought, well, great, I've just finished a new story and I'll send it off to a magazine and maybe I'll get it published somewhere and I'll move on to the next thing now. And then it just turned out that that was a story that kind of got its hooks into me for some reason. And I kept thinking about them, and eventually it became a novel. But I don't know exactly where Mayor came from. Maribel, I'm not sure exactly either, although I will say that my mom is a translator for the school district in Delaware, and she works with families whose children have special needs. And so I hear a lot about those families that she's working with. She gets really close to them sometimes. And I think I was just thinking in general about the sacrifices that a parent will make for their child, you know, about having that very specific reason for coming to the United States. I think part of my goal with this book became about like kind of playing with stereotypes. And one of those stereotypes that we have about the immigrant narrative is that people come for, quote unquote, a better life. And I thought, well, maybe I should have the Riveras come for just a very specific reason and actually refute that idea of just that very vague better life idea. I think partly because I was thinking about that, the character of Maribel was created too.
You write from different first-person narratives throughout the book, and each character is so specific with their voice and tone. I find that so impressive because you wrote it so well. And I really feel for each character. I really understand them. How did you decide that you wanted to write from several different characters rather than choosing, for example, writing from Mayor's point of view throughout the entire book?
I'm pretty sure what happened is at a certain point around the time that I wrote that initial short story, I haven't actually traced this back, so I can't say for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was around the time when I watched the TED Talk that Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie gave about the danger of a single story. And I think maybe I was trying to process that as an artist in my own way and thinking about, okay, so how can I push back against the danger of a single story? And the antidote for me seemed to be, well, if I could include as many stories as possible in one book, wouldn't that be a way of pushing back maybe?
I love that. And now I'd love to backtrack. I'd like to know, what inspired you to write? What made you fall in love with writing?
It was in high school, and it's a somewhat embarrassing story.
Oh my God, spill. I love these. So,
it has to do with a boy who I liked, actually, in high school.
Oh.
I was in love with him, essentially. And we were friends. And I would decided at some point that maybe I should tell him how I felt about him, that maybe we could become more than friends. I would be at a party at somebody's house and he would be there and I would somehow get him into a corner. I would be like, I really like you. I would call him like late at night and I would tell him, I really like you. And then what happened is he got really sick of it. He came into school one day with a blank journal that he had bought, actually. And he walked down the hallway to me and he handed me the journal and he said, why don't you write down everything you want to say to me for a year and then give this back to me? I was like so smitten that I would have done anything he asked. So I said, okay, sure. And I took the journal home with me and I started writing in it. And for a long time, the entries were really just to him. They were like how great he looked in calculus that day or whatever. And then
great confidence booster.
Exactly. And then after a few weeks, what happened was I realized, like something clicked. I did have that moment where I was like, I just love sitting down at the end of every day and writing. Just the sheer act of putting pen to paper, letting my thoughts out in a way that was unfiltered too, you know, in a way that was not an assignment for school. I didn't think, well, at the time I kind of told myself, well, I'm not going to give this back to him now. You know, I'm just going to write in here. I thought, well, no one will ever read this. I can say anything I want to say. I can be anybody I want to be. And that was just huge for me. I know you said you're the oldest, so yeah. I don't know if you're like me, but there were certain expectations placed on me, especially academically.
Oh, yes.
And I felt like I was constantly just trying to live up to them. And in the journal, I could be kind of like a stealth rebel. I kept writing in it for the full year. And I did actually give it back to him in some weird moment of bravery.
I'm telling you, that's commitment right there.
So he read the journal when I gave it back to him.
Oh my gosh.
And he thanked me for it. Nothing ever happened between the two.
What?
No.
Are you serious? That was it? Kaput? Done?
Yeah, that was it. But it was okay because you know what had happened by then was like I had fallen out of love with him and I had fallen in love with writing instead.
Oh my God, I love that.
Really never looked back from that moment. I kept and still keep journals. I have boxes and boxes of them. By the time I left for college, I was convinced I wanted to study writing. I didn't exactly know what I would do with it yet. I thought maybe at first I wanted to be a poet. I knew that writing was somehow in the future for me by then. And I think I would have figured that out eventually, but it probably would have taken me longer without that experience.
I feel like someone or you needs to write a script so this could turn into a movie because I've never ever heard of a guy saying, just write it down. I'm like, what? And then for you to actually be committed and write it every single day and then give it to him at the end of the year, but then to fall out of love with him, then to fall in love with writing and discovering yourself in a different way is like, whoa, I would totally watch that movie. Are you kidding? Or like read that book. I hope something like that is going to be in the works for your future somewhere there.
If I ever get stuck for novel ideas, I'll just mine that. Yeah.
Yes, please do. I don't know if you keep in contact with him or did in college. I wonder if he ever found out that he was an inspiration for you to start writing because now look at all your books.
We stayed friends. We're still friends. We don't keep in touch very much anymore. He lives on another continent now, so we just don't keep in touch very much. But a few years ago, he gave the journal back to me.
Wait, he kept it for that long?
Yeah.
There's no way he didn't secretly like you back.
I don't know what happened, but he gave it back to me a few years ago. And so I have it now. And it's really, really, really cringeworthy to look at it.
That's such great material.
Occasionally when I visit like a high school, I'll take it with me and read them some of the entries, which, you know, always has them like rolling on the floor. They're like,
I can't believe he gave it back to you. That's crazy. After you discovered your voice, after you totally fell out of love with this boy and then falling in love with your own stories and writing, where did you go from there?
I mean, I thought I wanted to do writing, but I was nervous that I would never get a job. So I declared a psychology major for a little while. And then I started doing those classes and it was just like a lot more science than I was equipped for. That's not my talents. I realized pretty quickly that I needed to do something else. And I had a friend who essentially told me, you know, you know you want to do English. So just be an English major, you know, just like go for it. And I switched over to the English major and learned then I went to Northwestern and they had an undergraduate writing program that you actually had to apply to get into. And so I decided to go ahead and apply and I got rejected. I was devastated, actually. I thought, well, maybe it's just not in the cards for me. Maybe, you know, the universe has kind of a different plan for me and I'll just be an English major and we'll see what happens. I mean, never underestimate the power of a good teacher. I had a teacher who pulled me aside one time at a campus reading. And it wasn't like a long conversation. She just said to me, are you thinking you might apply again to the program for next year? And I hadn't been thinking about it until that moment. But for some reason, the fact that she asked gave me enough motivation to decide to apply again. And I got in the second time. I graduated with a degree in creative writing. And then when I left school, I thought, well, I'll go to graduate school. And I picked 5 schools to apply to, and I got rejected to every single one. And again, it was just like, oh my gosh, what? Yeah. You know, like, someone's trying to tell me something, like, what? So I worked for 2 years in Chicago, where I lived, and my spare time, and also sometimes when I was supposed to be working, I would write stories. And I just did that for like 2 years, and I decided there was just something inside me, and I have no idea now what it was, but I guess it was just sort of pure ambition maybe, but I thought, if I don't do this now, I'm going to regret it. Possibly for the rest of my life. Because I understood, I guess, at that point that, you know, life can take on its own kind of momentum. Maybe you get married or you're in some other kind of relationship or you have kids or you have a job you really like or whatever it is. And it makes it hard to change and do something different.
Yeah.
And I just felt like, well, now's as good a time as any. And I applied again to graduate programs. And yeah, the first school I heard back from was Iowa.
This teacher that asked you at Northwestern, did she end up becoming sort of like a mentor to you?
I only took this one class with her, which was a poetry class, and I wasn't very good at poetry. So I, you know, it's amazing, really, that she saw something in me. So after that class was done, I didn't have any other classes with her while I was there. But actually, just in the last like year, maybe even in the last 6 months, it's been, I was doing this project where, just for my own personal self, where I was identifying the people who've kind of made a huge difference to me in my writing career. And I was writing them a letter just to thank them. I've had a really good run with this last book.
Yeah.
And I'm very aware that you don't do these things on your own. And I just felt like I wanted to thank these people who had made a difference, even in ways that they might not have realized they had done. So I wrote her a letter. I hunted her down. I figured out where she was teaching now and sent a letter to the department. And then a few weeks later, got a letter back from her.
Wow.
Where she was basically like, you know, it had nothing to do with me. You would have found your way there eventually, which is maybe true, but also maybe not true. You know, I don't know what would have happened. That was the extent of our communication since that moment.
I love that you see that this is a community effort for each person's path and journey. You end up where you are because of a tribe around you or someone along the way inspired you. All right, listeners listening in, Christina is a great role model for that. So if ever you're in a place where you feel like, oh, wow, this is a time to thank people, do what Christina did, because you just never know. A little thank you goes a long way.
I'm a big fan of the actual handwritten.
I'm a huge fan of handwritten letters too. What is your take to a listener who's really curious, who might be on the fence about joining an MFA program? Me personally, I love learning. I love being in classrooms and having structure. I think structure is great, but not everybody's like that. What is your take to a listener who might be on the fence about joining an MFA program or not knowing where on earth to find a good workshop to develop their craft or work more and have progress on their manuscript? What would you advise them?
I had a really, really fantastic experience getting my MFA, but I know that that's not the case for everybody. And I certainly don't think it's necessary or the only path to getting a book published or anything like that. It was valuable to me because what essentially it did was give me 2 years off of my life to do nothing but read and write. That's like a dream. You're never going to get that again. So to have that at the time that I had that and to be around lots of other people who are really serious about writing and thinking about writing and thinking about short stories and learning about new authors and all of that stuff, it was a pretty heady time for me. And so I think if you can do it, and part of it is about funding, and different schools are at different levels with that. I was really good with their funding, which was one of the nice things about going there. But if you have time to do it, if you have space in your life to do it, and if you financially can swing it, I don't think it's a bad thing. And I do think MFA programs in general get a little bit of a bad rap. Sometimes there's a feeling sometimes that maybe they're all churning out the same kind of writer, the same kind of story,
I've heard that.
Or something like that. Yeah, I've found that to be very untrue in my experience. I don't think that should be something that should scare anybody off. On the other hand, if you don't have, you know, the time or space or means to do something like that, the single most important thing I think you can do to prepare yourself to be a writer is to read. I'm sure every writer probably says this when they're standing up at an event and someone's like, "What's your advice?" It's like, read. But there's a reason that everybody says it, because
It's so
It's
true.
so, so, so important, and it's the best teacher that you will ever have. Now, if you can, within your community, find different organizations that support writing. I mean, I remember in Chicago before I left for graduate school, I took a creative writing class at the Newberry Library.
Wow.
I would go into the city at night and do that. Part of what that can afford you is the structure that you're talking about, but also it can just put other people in a class with you. And if you're really lucky, one or two of those people might be kind of on the same wavelength as you, writing wise.
Yeah.
And they might become the kind of people who you can share work with out, even outside of that class, you know, and beyond that class, and who can give you feedback and help make your writing stronger. And that, in conjunction with reading really deeply and seriously, I think if you have those two things going, you're in just about the best situation you can be in.
I hear from different authors too who've gone to MFA programs and love their experience. They also say, like you mentioned, you know, sometimes you'll luck out and find some really great people they can connect with. And there are some of these authors that I noticed they all met in the same year, the same program, and they all rose together. It's pretty crazy. And they formed their own writer's retreat in a way. And I love that they formed that bond at the MFA program, then carried it on with them through the rest of their life.
Yeah. And it's really fun because then you're cheering all those people on. So when you see their books come out and you make an effort to go to their reading so that one extra person is sitting in the audience.
Yeah.
The world of writing is actually really small.
Yes, it is.
You know, like there's not actually a lot of us writers. Sometimes it feels like there's a lot, but other times I'm reminded that it's kind of a small insular world. And so, as with anything in life, the more relationships you have, the more connections you have like that, the easier it's going to be in some ways, opening up doors for you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And also just writing in itself, it can be a very lonely process, especially for those who are very social and love to be around people. So I always say, whether it's an MFA or a workshop class or like that one creative writing class you mentioned before going to the graduate program, is you're making friends. If you're struggling, you can talk to these people who understand you, and not just to your mom or dad or boyfriend or girlfriend or best friend who may not understand what the heck you're talking about because they might not be in the creative world. They're just like, okay, so then don't write if you're stuck. Like, I'm like, no, you don't understand. It's nice to find your community too. That's the cool thing about it. And I do love that you mentioned reading because that is a big deal. And I actually heard about this word used with reading that I've never heard before. It's called active reading, where the specific people, they read, but they read with intention to specifically learn
Yes.
from the authors. Do you do active reading?
Oh, yeah. I read a lot just for pleasure. But if something really strikes me, like if I'm reading a story or a novel and a passage, especially when it invokes some kind of emotion in me, if I read something and I'm like cracking up out loud, or if I'm reading something and it's making me kind of feel misty-eyed or whatever it is, I will try to stop myself actually and look through it and read as a writer, which is to say, like, I try to deconstruct it so that I can understand how it is that the author made me feel that way. Like, what are the decisions kind of that the author might have made at every turn that created this effect in me? How do you really do that? And I'm still learning. Everything I read is like a revelation. Every new thing. I just read Jacqueline Woodson's new novel, Another Brooklyn, and I was like, oh, God.
She's so good.
Yeah. But there was something about the structure of that book that I thought was so brilliant, and the lightness of it that just felt really fresh. And I was just like, but how is she doing this? So I was training myself to say, like, where does she end before a space break? And why? Why end there instead of pushing the scene out three more sentences?
No, that's a brilliant way of seeing it. Because for me, I noticed that I'm a very slow reader. I'm like trying to unpack why I'm such a slow reader. And I get so frustrated where my girlfriend can read, like, she read your whole book in half a day. She loved it that much. And she was able to breeze through it. It took me a full week because I'm slower. I think for me, I love to savor almost every word or every phrase and sentence that you guys string together. And I'm like, how do you do it? And that's beautiful the way you said this. Christina, you've written Come Together, Fall Apart, The World in Half, The Book of Unknown Americans, and I'd love to know if you've noticed at all or observed any kind of evolving through your writing creatively.
That's an interesting question. I don't think anyone's ever asked me that before.
Well, thank you.
I did feel as I was writing the Book of Unknown Americans that in some way that the prose was maybe a little bit stronger than anything that I had written in the past. But I think that's just a product of, as you said, like having written books before this, having a few under my belt. It just sort of comes with experience. You're hoping anyway that you're always getting better as a writer.
Yeah.
The other thing I think that you gain with experience is courage and like faith in your own abilities. So I felt a little bit more like it wasn't such a risk. And I mean, writing always feels in some ways like you're jumping off a cliff. At least it does to me.
Yeah.
But I felt a little bit like I sort of knew I would land safely, at least in certain ways with this book. I think it was a big challenge to write all of those multiple narrators and all of their varying voices. But I also sort of felt at some level like it was a challenge that I could handle. I can remember writing scenes where the dialogue felt more spare than anything I'd written before. And to me, that felt like some kind of accomplishment. I'm always trying to look for ways to pare everything down and make things concise, even in a novel. I think there's more room to breathe and it can be a little bit baggier by nature, but my own proclivity as a writer is to have things be really tight and concise.
Mm-hmm.
So when I can do that, I feel like I've probably made some kind of move forward. That all being said, I still have to say that I think Come Together, Fall Apart has some of my favorite writing that I've ever done, which was the first book that I wrote. And I think partly that's because it was the time when I was figuring out really my voice. And I felt I could just sort of harness it and ride with it in a way that I had never been able to do before.
So in a way, like a freedom.
Yeah. You know, it's almost kind of just like a sentimental favorite because of that.
With your writing, do you usually work on your own? I know with some writers, they like to just be on their own, whether that means literally like lock themselves up in a cabin in the woods, which sounds nice.
Love to do that.
You're like, but I got a family, woman.
Exactly.
I have no time for
kids
that
to take care of. Yeah.
I admire you. You have time to write these stories that matter so much, and our world needs voices that you've put out there for us. You're able to balance a family and it not even diminishing any of your efforts in how good your stories came out. How on earth, can I ask you, what is your secret?
Well, first of all, I work slowly. The book took me 5 years to write, partly because of that, because I'm trying to balance and I can't often write as much as I would like to write. So it takes me longer. I just have to be okay with that. If this is the life that I want, then that's part of the deal. That's one thing is that I've kind of just resigned myself to. I don't always get to write when I want to write, but that's okay. And it will just take longer. And I feel very, very strongly that it really, really doesn't matter how fast you write. It matters how well you write.
Ooh, I love that.
There's this feeling sometimes writers have of this urgency. I have to get something out. And certainly if I can say that partly because my husband has a very stable, steady job that helps support us. And if you're in a different situation, you may be forced to write faster than what I'm saying right now. But that in general, that feeling of urgency, like I have to get something out there, I have to get something out. I see this a lot in students, like young writers who feel like somehow they have to capitalize on their youth. They have to get something out there. It's like, no, you have to slow down. That's what you have to do. You know, it doesn't matter how fast you write. It doesn't matter if you have a book out every single year. It matters if 3 books that you publish over the course of your career are books that really mattered. That's the only thing that counts in the end. So I think about that a lot to give myself permission to be a little bit slower than I would like to be. I also, like I said before, I am very aware that this doesn't exist in isolation. I write a book and keep it to myself for as long as I can. When I'm ready to give it away, I have really good friends who are amazing readers who help me get it to the next level. I have an incredible agent who helps me get it to a level after that. I had insane, amazingly talented editor on this last book who just made me a better writer and made the book a better book. My kids, they kind of get it now. Like they're young, but they kind of get it that I have to go off and do this sometimes. My husband's super supportive. I spent a lot of weekends writing. I spent a lot of evenings writing. I was getting up for a while at 5 a.m. and writing just because that was the only way I could find time to work. So you just kind of do what you can. I think that's the story for every writer, though, in a way. You're squeezing it into your life and just you do what you can to make it happen.
Listeners emailed me about editors. So I feel like you would be the first author I'm actually asking about your editor. You met your editor, I'm assuming through your agent?
Yes. When the book was ready, my agent sent it out to some editors to have them take a look and see if anyone connected to the story enough to publish it and be interested. And I had the great, great pleasure of working with Robin Desser, who's at Knopf. And she's sort of like this legendary editor. I almost had to talk myself into like, it's okay, you can work with her. I was so intimidated.
Almost like starstruck, right?
I was intimidated to work with her. And I was wondering if I could work with her because of that. Like, would I be able to be honest and have the kind of relationship that you need to have with someone to be able to work on a creative piece? So the second I talked to her, she totally put me at ease. We had a really great working relationship, and she read, I think we did three different versions, she and I, three different rounds of edits. And she would read the manuscript and then she would send me these 11-page, 13-page, single-spaced letters.
Wow.
That were like typed out with all of her feedback and comments. And then on top of that, she would send me the manuscript all marked up. But it was like a dream. The letters would come and I would kind of let them sit on the counter for a few days. And then you would go through them and I would feel like, oh, yes, this, like, why hadn't I thought of that? And in every case, it was just like her elevating the book or elevating my own intentions and being able somehow to key in on what those were. She was amazing.
That is so amazing. Well, Christina, you've been so awesome. Let us know where we can find you on social media and what we should look out for in the future from you.
I have a Twitter account, which is Chris Henriquez. I'm a little conflicted about Twitter, so I'm like on there, but not as much as a lot of people are. Sometimes I just tweet about my kids, and sometimes I retweet. It's mostly literary stuff that I feel really passionate about. Like, there was an interview with one of my favorite writers, Merritt Tierce, the other day that I retweeted. You know, it'll be stuff like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
I have a Facebook page, which is an author page that you can go to and keep up with, you know, where I'm going to be, if I'm doing public events and stuff. And I am doing a lot of traveling still this fall and next spring. The other thing I should mention is that I have this website. It's a Tumblr, unknownamericans.tumblr.com. And it is a place where people can share their real life stories of coming to the United States. And you can share your own or you can share a family member's. So the first one that I posted was my dad's real life story. I just post them when they come in. So I occasionally have whole classrooms of students who will read the book and who will send me their stories. And I try to post those, you know, or I'll just get individual submissions, and all the instructions for submitting are there on the Tumblr. So
Christina, thank you so much for your time.
No, thank you. This was my pleasure.
That wraps up our chat with Christina Henriquez. Christina, thank you so much for your time and for being so amazing. I really enjoyed our chat. Listeners, thank you so much for listening in, as always, and I hope you loved her episode as much as I did. Please hop on over to Twitter and say hi to Christina at Chris Henriquez. For the resources and books mentioned in Christina's episode, check out her show notes page at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Christina Henriquez. I also wanted to wish my girlfriend Moonlin a very happy birthday today. She's a huge part of the podcast and helps to edit and shape the majority of the podcast episodes on our show. I heard from quite a few of you about how much you love the audio quality, and I have to thank her for helping to make the show as great as it can be. One more thing before we finish up with today's episode. I know there's a lot of you who are working on your own books to publish. Vermont College of Fine Arts has two writing programs that could be super beneficial to you. Their MFA in Writing is one of the original low residency programs, and frankly, one of the best in the country. Writers gather at VCFA's beautiful campus for two separate 10-day residencies each year. Imagine yourself immersed in a setting much like an intense writer's retreat where you're fully committed to workshops, lectures, and readings. After the residencies, you return home and work with a dedicated faculty advisor throughout the rest of the semester. The MFA in Writing and Publishing is their very first and brand new residential program that also focuses on improving your writing and giving you the tools to thrive in the arts. Every student learns directly from agents, editors, and publishers. The cool thing is that it's a cross-genre program, which means if you're a poet, you're encouraged to learn from faculty in fiction or nonfiction. Imagine yourself learning and creating in this incredible writing community, all while living on their gorgeous campus in Montpelier, Vermont. Be sure to head over to 88cupsoftea.com/VCFA to learn more about these programs and their MFA in Writing for Children and Young Adults.